You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Ethnic Christian Armenians who have been living in an area of the South Caucasus area called Artsakh for nearly 3,000 years have been exiled from their homes. It just took a matter of days due to a brutal military operation by Azerbaijan. 120,000 ethnic Armenians were removed from their ancestral lands after Azerbaijan started a bombing campaign 3 weeks ago. The military blitz capped off a nine-month-long physical blockade of the enclave, resulting in starvation and the eventual exodus of the Armenian population. Now, all but a handful of Armenians from Artsakh have taken what they could and traveled to neighboring Armenia to seek safety. But for a country of less than 3 million people, absorbing 120,000 refugees is significant, and the humanitarian crisis is growing. UC Davis is now stepping in to help, and Keith David Wantapa is the professor and director of human rights studies and joins us now to explain. Good morning, Professor Wantapa.
Good morning, Vicky. It's wonderful to be here.
You know, thank you for making the time. We're going to get to the situation in Armenia in just a moment, but we had invited you last week to talk about this crisis, and over the weekend, we saw a dramatic situation unfold in the Middle East after Hamas militants from Gaza attacked Israel. So let's just start with that analysis of the events happening in Israel and the threat that this poses to stability in the region.
Of course. I mean, over the weekend, Hamas, the government in Gaza, launched a brutal and very surprisingly effective attack on Israeli cities and communities, committing, I think, terrible war crimes, kidnapping people from music concerts and raves. And it's shocking, and we should all be shocked about it. The success of the operation bears many of the hallmarks of support from the government of Iran. And then Israel, with one of the largest and most effective militaries, not just in the region but in the world, has retaliated against Gaza, home to 2 million people in an area just 5 miles by 25 miles, about the size of the island of Manhattan, with brutal force as well, committing an additional war crime, which is placing Gaza itself under a full-blown blockade of water, electricity, and food. So we're looking at a terrible situation where my own hope is that Israel operates with a great deal of restraint, and that we can use this as a moment to reflect on not an immediate crisis, but on a problem that's 75 years in the making.
Yeah. Through a human rights lens, can you shed light on the Palestinian perspective on what they've endured and faced at the hands of Israel?
Sure. I mean, one of the this quarter, I teach my largest human rights studies course, over 220 people, in a course called Human Wrongs, Human Rights. It's probably the largest human rights studies course in the United States. And one of the books we read is from 1992, a graphic novel by Joe Sacco called Palestine. He was a journalist who went and lived in the Gaza Strip. And the situation he narrates of blockades, of oppression, of people living without hope was true in the 1990s, and it's still true for Palestinians in Gaza who have lived, like the Armenians of Artsakh for the previous, before the military operation, under a blockade, under siege, where they're unable to travel in search of work, but also even for health care, where they're looking at a lack of opportunity and also a lack of a peaceful resolution where they can live lives in relative freedom and security. So it's unfortunate that Hamas, a terrorist organization, has taken advantage of that despair. But I think that we can't start this story. And that's one of the things we do in human rights is we don't start the story at the moment of the outbreak of violence. We want to understand the root causes of human suffering, which has led to this moment.
Given that you are teaching a class on human rights with over 200 students, and it's the largest class of its kind in the country, where did this all begin for you as someone with obviously a deeply vested interest and passion and heart for human rights?
Well, that's a wonderful question. I was really motivated to pursue this work because of war, In 2003, I led a group of scholars to Baghdad in the months right after the U.S. invasion and occupation. And we were there to witness the paroxysm of violence and destruction, which had led to the looting of museums, the destruction of higher education, and then also the burning of libraries. And this concern that I have about preserving people's right to their to a culture, to study safely and securely, to be able to move, to find safety if necessary, really began in that moment. And teaching human rights has been part of my passion ever since. So in addition to my 200-person freshman class, I also teach another 100 people in my upper division course as well.
You know, over the past several weeks, and this is why we asked you to come on Insight last week to join us today, was due to another major development in the South Caucasus area of Armenia and Azerbaijan. Can you bring our listeners up to date about what's happening and this humanitarian crisis that's also unfolding?
Right. So almost 3 years to the day, you had me on to talk about this terrible war that had broken out where Azerbaijan, taking advantage of the world's attention being elsewhere because of the pandemic, to attack the Armenian enclave of Nagorno-Karabakh. Armenians had lived in that part of the South Caucasus for millennia and had broken away from Azerbaijan at the time of the breakup of the Soviet Union and had established a fairly democratic small state where Armenian interests were preserved, where Armenian culture could be practiced and celebrated, where Armenians could live in relative peace because they had experienced over the generation previously massacre and pogroms at the hands of the Azerbaijan government, which at those days was and now is led by the a dynasty of dictators who are able to use the enormous wealth of Azerbaijan, which they don't share with the populace either, but the oil wealth of Azerbaijan to exert tremendous clout and control on international diplomacy.
Hmm. What is the greatest need right now to protect the human rights of the people of Artsakh? I mean, Armenia has now absorbed over 100,000 ethnic Armenians.
So Armenians of Artsakh were fleeing. It's important to understand that they weren't fleeing. They were faced with ethnic cleansing. And so they fled ethnic cleansing. They fled a situation without a choice. And in so doing, they were only able to bring what they could carry, leaving behind their homes and other resources that they could draw upon. And I know it's hard for us in this part of California to imagine, but we're coming into winter in Armenia. And many of these people are without homes, and it's very, very cold. There, but also Armenia has high unemployment. It's a country that's gone through a revolution most recently where it's thrown off corrupt rulers and is just now getting its footing. And so this influx of population is going to put a terrible strain both on the on its economy, but also on a fledgling democracy.
Hmm. I think about you when you talk about that you were on the show almost 3 years ago, and so much has happened in that time, not only between Armenia and Azerbaijan, over the weekend with Israel and Palestine. You also have Afghanistan and the U.S. withdrawal, Iran and women. Are there similarities between all of these in all of these crises?
So one of the similarities I see is that we're reaching a moment in our collective history where the United States is in many ways absent from its necessary role as a promoter of human rights around the world. We've said to Israel, we don't care what happens to the Palestinians. We said to Azerbaijan, we don't care what happens to the Armenians. We said to the people of Afghanistan, we don't care about you and what happens to women there. We should care. We must care. And, you know, words alone are not sufficient, but we have all sorts of tools in our toolbox to really address these situations. So the thread that runs through this is this American absence. And it's not just Republicans, it's not just Democrats. We've sort of ever since the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, we've really turned in on ourselves. And we have a responsibility as the wealthiest democracy on the planet, I convey this to my students. And this is bringing it back to your first questions. The reason why my classes are full is because my young people that take them see that there's a problem in the world and they want to know what they can do to help. So in many ways, I'm very hopeful about the future, but I'm very, very worried about our now. So if there was anything I would leave listeners with, it's the idea that when America steps back from its important leadership role in protecting and promoting human rights, there is real suffering around the world. And that suffering then drags us back into moments of terrible conflict.
Do you think there are disparities in the attention that we give to certain conflicts over others?
I think that's been the case. I mean, those of us in human rights and humanitarian studies really welcome the outpouring of international assistance to Ukraine. But then we're wondering, what about other parts of the world that have faced similar problems and didn't start at the level of resources and wealth that Ukraine began with? So that we would encourage people to not dismiss human rights problems in parts of the world where they're common. I think that's one of the other issues. It's like, oh, it's happening in Africa. It's always like that. No, it's not. Right? This is just standard for the Middle East. No, it's not. Peace, conflict, human rights violations should be unacceptable no matter where they are on the planet. And so that's one of the issues that we're dealing with. And I think with the conflict between Palestinians and Israelis, because of the close relationship the United States has with Israel, the long-term relationship, we tend to focus where we think about the story on attacks on Israel without really recognizing the decades and decades of oppression under which Palestinians have been living. In an occupation, a situation that has a negative impact on Israelis and Palestinians alike.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Keith David Wattenbaugh, Professor and Director of Human Rights Studies at UC Davis. You know, we're talking about so many issues that are going on all over the world, and you're teaching this to students. What do you think the status of human rights is? I know that's a pretty big, loaded question.
I think that on the one hand, when we think about human rights, I work a lot with my students on what's called a negativity bias, which is where we're trained as social scientists, to address problems. So we look for problems that we want to solve, and we lose sight of tremendous human rights advances, and we also lose sight of the people who really put themselves on the line, who do so without cynicism, to lead in human rights circles. I think most recently about Narghis Mohammadi of Iran, who was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for her activism on behalf of women's rights and the abolition of the death penalty in Iran. She's in prison, right? But she is, I think, a model for many of us to follow, to look to for leadership in terms of opposing the kinds of oppression and sort of gender apartheid that's practiced in in Iran, which then leads into my next point, which is that one of the things we teach our students are when things have gone right. And so the thing that I often point to my students in terms of things that have gone right is that there used to be apartheid in South Africa. There's not. And the transition was relatively peaceful. So when my students look at the world today, they have this sense of deep hopelessness. And I think one of our responsibilities as educators, as journalists and others, is to look where things have worked relatively well, understand the tactics that were used and the politics at play, and learn from those experiences. So as terrible as the situation is in Israel-Palestine right now, as terrible as the situation is for Armenians in the South Caucasus now, I'm actually not without hope. I'm not without hope. But I am deeply concerned as an American about our absence from those situations and our failure to play a positive and constructive role. You know, I'm not sure we should be, sending military assistance to Israel, a nuclear-armed state. And we certainly should be considering sanctions against Azerbaijan, about supporting Armenia's membership in the ICC, the International Criminal Court, and really working to call attention to the kinds of war crimes and human rights abuses which populate both of those situations and have led to the conflicts that we're seeing now.
I mean, it just hits home to, you know, what is a common phrase, like knowledge is power, and bringing that awareness, especially to younger generations, is so important. But you also have another arm in this. You have the Article 26 mm-hmm. backpack, and that is another solution that's tied to us. Remind us what that is.
Of course. So beginning with the war in Syria, another reason why I've been on Cap Radio in the past, we saw that large numbers of university-age refugees were fleeing Syria, and they were moving to refugee camps where they were facing serious barriers to continuing their higher ed. And at UC Davis, we're very committed to the human right to education because we see it not only as a basic human right, but as a way to build peaceful and productive citizens and societies. And so we realized that one of the forms of discrimination, one of the many problems that refugee students were facing, is they were losing their important documents, or they couldn't get their documents from the governments that had forced them to flee. And so we developed a tool, a whole ecosystem that's both human and digital, to really to provide an opportunity for young people to safely curate, store, share, and have access anywhere in the world to copies of their documents. So over almost 4,000 people around the world are using it now, and we are a week away from deploying it in Armenia on behalf of Armenians in the Armenian language. So we're very hopeful about that. And we've also been working with colleagues about deploying it on behalf of the people of Gaza.
What have you heard from, you know, the 4,000 plus people who've benefited from the Article 26 backpack?
Well, I think first and foremost, they feel a sense of relief and safe and sense that their documents cannot be lost. Those of us in the first world, we think, oh, I can lose something. I'll just go get another copy. If you're a displaced person, that piece of paper that you brought from your homeland with you that you've protected, it could be stolen. It could be lost. It could, you know, fire, flood. Some of the situations we even face in California in terms of loss of materials that are important to us. So they feel this incredible sense of relief. They tell us that they really trust UC Davis to help them out. But many others are using the backpack and the connection it builds to learn about scholarship opportunities, access to things like Duolingo exams, but also refugees. And this, unfortunately, will be true for the ones who've been forced to flee Artsakh. What binds them together is this sense that the world has forgotten them, and that the world is going to stand by and just let them. The world would prefer that they just disappear. And what Backpack does is to remind them that, no, you matter. We remember you. And we will help. We will try to help you in the ways that we can. And so this is one of my great fears, is there are more refugees now than there have ever been in human history. And that, you know, this is a population that we cannot forget. And we should all remember that becoming a refugee is something we all share.
Finally, how can the public get involved?
Well, we always, you know, UC Davis, we're always willing to talk to people about philanthropic support and so on. But the ways that I think people can really help here is, I mean, in the case of Palestine-Israel, is raising questions about continuing military assistance to Israel, especially when, you know, it has such an enormous military, but also to remind people that this last week, while terrible and something that should be denounced, is not the beginning of the story. I think in terms of Armenia, there are various organizations from World Kitchen to the International Red Cross to the Armenian Relief Society, which are useful. At Davis, we're always eager to find people who are willing to help us expand access to Backpack to other communities of need. We've been very interested in ways we might be able to extend Backpack to the U.S.-Mexico border to support people, diverse populations moving from Venezuela and other parts of Central and South America. So there is a lot to do. I think the most important thing is it's the motto of Backpack, which is hope is good, a plan is better.
Professor Wantanpaw, thank you so much for the time and all the work that you're doing.
Thank you for having us here, Vicky.
Keith David Wantanpah is professor and director of human rights studies at UC Davis. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.